Season 5, Episode 8, Lost Israel, Part 1. It opens with a couple coming into the squad saying that they have a missing child. Sipowicz and Simone bring them into a room. We find out their names are Steve and Sherry Egan. And Steve thinks it's his fault, which perks up the ears of Sipowicz, because he has let his son hang out with a vagrant named Israel. What I loved about the intro and the first talk with Steve is, like, Sipowicz is suspicious from, like, moment one with Steve.
They only have one kid, right?
Yeah, they only have one kid, supposedly. Okay. His only son.
Because there's a character in Veep named Danny again, and he's, like, a huge douche. And so I was thinking, like, I wonder if, like, he was, like, the younger brother of this, and he just got, like, sent to an orphanage, and he became, like, a political douchebag or something.
Essentially, Dan just keeps talking. Dan. Now I'm calling him Dan, because you said Dan.
It's Steve.
Steve. Steve keeps talking, saying, like, oh, I think this was my fault. I let him hang out with this.
He is a total Steve, by the way.
Yeah, Steve is a perfect name for Steve. He keeps mentioning Tompkins Square Park, where Israel is, and he thinks that he may have let his son get too close to him. He's putting a lot of stink on this Israel.
Yeah, he's landed on thick right out the gate.
And he has
and that's where, when you said earlier Andy's suspicious of him, I think that's why, from like the get-go, he's too... It's too much, man.
He also has pictures of Israel with his son, Brian, which is odd. Like, why would you...
Yeah, are you taking pics of your son with, like, some random homeless dude?
Like, what's the deal? They said, okay, we'll take a look at it. Usually we have to wait a certain amount of time before missing persons, but we'll go ahead and start on it. And when they leave the room, Sipowicz says... That guy talks too much and he don't talk about the right things. As they walk out, Fancy comes by with a DOA and Sipowicz immediately assumes it's the boy. And he says, no, it's an adult on the Williamsburg Bridge. Sipowicz kind of says, you don't suspect him at all. And Simone says, I kind of a little. And then we have the theme song. This is the theme song to NYPD Blue, and this is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, go through every single episode of NYPD Blue. Here's that theme song. Just to get through the other case, because really this case is about Israel and the Egans, Medavoy and Martinez have a case of a dead Hasidic Jew female, Jewish female, on the Williamsburg Bridge, and her family found out about it and is at the crime scene, and they're kind of on the outskirts trying to get some information. When they find her, it looks like it was like they're trying to stage a rape and then tried to set the body on fire.
Is that what the bottle was about?
Yeah, I don't know.
Was the bottle the staging of the rape, or the staging of the fire, or, like, the trying the fire?
I don't know, that was kind of confusing to me, because they were like, oh, there's a bottle here, and Medavoy says, that might be playing up the rape aspect, and I'm like, well, do people who rape have bottles? Yeah, it's kind of confusing. The DOA is Herschel Rosenblatt. Her brother and father are there. And they ask the detectives, like, why the pictures and why the touching?
And well, I mean, it's part of their religion, man.
It's true. Medavoy does his best to, like, explain to them that he'll try to get them to do a minimal autopsy and do their best to not screw with the remains.
And yeah, Medavoy's, like, really cool with trying to help them out.
Well, Medavoy had that one case years ago with the Torah, and I guess
that's right, him and Andy,
and he did some research on the Hasidic Jewish folk, and so he was trying his best to accommodate them in any way he can, and it was kind of funny because at the end of that scene, what's her name, because Russell's there, but she leaves this case halfway through, She's like, why don't we get you guys a car and get you home? And Metal Boy's like, don't touch them, Diane. And she's like, yeah, I know they don't like to be touched by strange women, man. It's all good. And Metavoy was trying to, like... I wrote down, Metavoy whips out his Hasidic Jew knowledge.
Yeah, I think he was just trying to help. I think Diane... Because, like, the whole scene gets really weird, and then Metavoy gets, like, turns it into a pity party. I think Diane took it out of... I think she freaks out about it too quickly, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, all he was trying to do was, like, just make sure, because he, like, knew, like, you know, not to touch the body, not to, like, take as many pictures. And so I think he was just trying to, like, make sure that she didn't accidentally touch him. And she then, like, kind of is like, I know, I got it. I fucking got it, bro. And so it kind of bugs him a little bit, because later on you see he does something for them that no one else even thought of.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, like, kind of a cool thing, but, like, I don't know. Like, I just feel like she, like, all he was trying to do was just, like, be helpful in the whole situation, and she was just kind of like, I got it. Like, don't tell me what, like, I get it. I don't know. It was just weird to me.
I kind of felt that it was, he was like, okay, I'm just trying to be as accommodating to these people. And then Russell heard it as, okay, Metavoy is trying to look into the religious angle when there's no reason to. When really, he's just, like, trying to make sure that they do their best for them, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
And she's like, why does it matter? Yeah. Like, it has nothing to do with this crime. And he's like, no, I just don't want you to, like, do something that's going to offend them, because we don't need to do that on top of the tragedy of their dead loved one.
Their religion has everything to do, in my opinion, the religion is ingrained in the crime because it's a part of the person who's dead. So, like, and it's the way they live, so Metavoy has to include that into the crime. Maybe you're right, he just shouldn't look up the religious aspect of the killing, like, was this a killing because she was Jewish? I get that part. But, like, because of what religion they choose to be, it is ingrained into, like, everything they do, so it has to be a part of the crime. So I think where Metavoy should get some credit is his, like, Hasidic Jew radar is going off, and he's like, oh, okay, these are all the things we have to do to make sure we're doing everything correct while trying to solve this crime. That's what I think.
Yeah, and he's being very diligent, which is cool of Metavoy. It's when his annoying nature kind of helps, in a way.
A little bit, yeah.
Next thing with this case, Fancy lets them know that, I think, anti-crime or somebody pulled in a girl who used their DOA's credit cards.
Yeah, and she got caught with the
what's her name? Herschel's credit card.
Is her name Herschel?
I believe so, yes.
Are you sure?
I'm like positive. Because I triple checked it, because I was like, are they referring to her as Herschel? And I think so. If I'm wrong, the three people who really like our show on Twitter are gonna let me know real quick. I'm pretty sure it's Herschel. When they go to interview the girl who had the credit cards, it's, I think she's like 17. Like, she's young.
Yeah.
Her name's Edis, and she's a real bitch. Cursing at everybody, getting all pissy, and she's like, why does it matter? It's $10 a gas. I stole it from my mom, because she hid it under her bed where she hides everything.
Dude, Kirk, Herschel's the name I think of her brother.
I don't think so.
Because I just looked up a full cast list, and Herschel is under a dude.
Hester. Hester is next to Herschel.
Okay, yeah.
It's because I put Hester DOA, Herschel brother, and I read DOA, Herschel. So it's Hester. My bad.
So when I asked you, are you sure her name was Herschel? And you said over and over, yes, you weren't.
Okay, Kyle, you were right. Would you like to start your You Were Right party? I'll get the streamers.
I don't need to start it. It's been going on since your birth, so...
Jesus. Edis lets him know that her mom, Lupe...
Found him under her mom's bed.
Yeah, and she gives up her mom no problem because, according to her, her mom put her on the street at an early age because her mom's a junkie. Her and her boyfriend are. They bring in Lupe, And Lupe is a little bit of a bitch herself, and basically just admits that her boyfriend Victor did it after she thinks she's going to get a walk on what happened.
None of these people have any problem just, like, ratting the other person out.
I think her name is Lupe69, and...
No, it's not.
No, it's because 6ix9ine's that rapper that ratted on a bunch of people. Lupe...
Lupe69.
Says, like, maybe I should stop protecting him. He robs a bunch of people to get junk, to get their drug of choice, and this robbery went too far, and he ended up murdering her, and he wanted my help to cover it up, but now he's going to get us plane tickets to, like, fucking Costa Rica or some bullshit.
Somewhere, getting them somewhere out of here.
And she basically says, I'll give you where he's at if you give me a walk, is basically what she said. Next time we see him, she took him to the travel agency where he's supposed to be. There's some weird scene where they can't find him, they can't see him, and it's been a while. So then she, like, closes her eyes and tries to speak him into existence, and then he shows up.
That was really weird, too.
Yeah, it was... I think it was just, like, we need to vent for time. come up with some shit.
I just felt like they couldn't fill the whole hour with the Israel story, and they needed to give the other three actors something to do, so they just, like, were like, here you go.
here's a little nugget.
Here's this walk-through crime that, like, every time you see them, something's gone right, and they're able to just pick up the next person.
when the dude shows up, he's with a younger lady... whose name I cannot remember, because I didn't write it down. I think it was Inez. They tell her, stay in the car until we got Victor, and as soon as they put Victor on the hood, she gets out there to fucking bitch and moan about him being with a younger woman.
Wasn't she not supposed to be, or wasn't he not supposed to be hanging out with her, or something like that? Doesn't she say that?
Well, she says that, but that just means that she's jealous because she knows that he's been probably banging her. Much like Tekashi 6ix9ine's friends, there's no loyalty. but she gets out of the car and she's like, oh, yeah, you hanging out with this one? And he's like, I met her on coincidence. Like, oh, yeah, and that kiss was coincidental, too. And, like, yelling at him when he gets arrested.
But there's no way she'd be, like, that close, like, that she'd be able to get out of the car and start yelling at him, either.
No. Like, she would not. She'd be told to, like, take a walk. When they get Victor into a room, he just flat out admits that he did it, but he only did it for junk, and his girlfriend helped out trying to cover it up.
I'm telling you, this whole crime, and the solving of this crime, is just like someone walking through a game and just hitting X the whole time. Like that, at every cutscene, they're like, X, just get me to the point where it tells me that I'm winning it. X, 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 X. Like, that's all they're doing over and over.
It's very much like L.A. Noir, where you could fuck up everything, but you're still gonna eventually end the case. Because L.A. Noir, the way it works is you can make all the wrong moves, but you still have to end the case or the story doesn't progress.
Uh-huh.
So you have to eventually catch the guy in some random roundabout way.
I don't know, no wonder that game's like $10 online.
Like, it's not a very intuitive situation. So he just admits it, and he also says the phrase, this wouldn't have happened if I wasn't on junk. And I love how people can separate the fact, like, hey, look, I was on drugs.
Yeah, so give me a go-by. Just give me a pass.
Yeah, I decided to take the drugs, and then I committed the crime on the drugs, but really, we should prosecute drugs.
I mean, I know I was doing two illegal things.
Look, two illegals cancel each other out, right? That's like negatives in math.
Yeah, -3 + -3 is +6, so what's happening? -3 × -3 is +9, my bad. Because when you add them, they stay the same.
Well, if you were on drugs, you would make that mistake, so it adds up.
So there we go.
The next time the end of the episode, or end of the episode, the end of this case, Medavoy and Martinez go to talk to the father, Herschel and Hester's father, and to let him know that the man confessed, And Greg let him know there was no need for an autopsy, so they'll get the remains to you as soon as possible. And then Medavoy says, I understand that according to your beliefs, you want to have as much of her body. And he says, yeah, if her blood was spilt. And then Medavoy gives him soil from where she was that had blood on it. And the guy is very, very appreciative and just says, I thank you for this. And then puts on his hat and walks off.
Yeah, that's the thing I was saying. Like, I just think the whole time, like, Greg was just knew he had to, like, he had to take the religion into account. And whereas Russell just kind of dismissed it.
It also has the moment where Martinez kind of gives him a bat pack. Bat pack? Back pat. A backpack.
A bat pat?
He gives him a Jan Sport, and he says, good job.
He gives him a nice Herschel.
he gives him one of those North Face backpacks. He gives him a Camelback. He gives him a pat on the back and says, nobody else would have thought to do that, Greg. And then it kind of just ends with, yeah, Greg's cool.
Well, he has that self-pity bullshit line on the bridge where he's like, I'm sorry, sometimes I can even bore myself. And it's like, dude, then be interesting.
Dude, then be interesting.
Kyle, that Crystal Leah quote, he's like, dude, be interesting, and I'll listen to you. The Jew girl's dead, and we have a suspect.
From the beginning of the
now
episode...
we're going to move on to the main role, the main title.
Yeah, Lost Israel.
Do you think it's kind of interesting that there's a Hasidic Jew and a guy named Israel in this, and it's called Lost Israel?
I mean, you know, connections. That's just good. That's just good writing.
Do you think the writers are trying to say that the Hasidic Jews in New York are lost because they don't live in Israel like they should in the homeland?
You know, I don't know, Kyle. I'm not prepared to make that assumption. One thing I wondered is, because I understand that the yarmulke is very important, but why do they wear those other hats? Because those other hats were not around to be a part of,
well,
life.
You know, well, I don't know why, but I will tell you this, that underneath that, on when they wear that hat, underneath that, they're wearing a yarmulke.
Well, yeah, because I saw that in Herschel and Hester's father.
What's the point? Like, does God hate bald spots?
Well, no, I'm just wondering, like, is the hat to cover up the yarmulke?
No, I think the hat is something spiritual.
The hat on top of the yarmulke?
Uh-huh. I think that hat is something spiritual, or maybe it's like their clothes, and it's like the only fucking thing they can wear on their head besides a yarmulke.
I don't know. I'm going to have to do some research. Because it doesn't make sense to me, because it's like the yarmulke is a head covering that has its own specific purpose. And then on top of that...
how much do you guys really want to sweat? Like, it's fucking hot in New York, dude. Like, what month is it right now? Like, what month does this take place? Do we know? Do we have a time frame? Because if it's in, like, June, July, August, it is humid as fuck. And those guys have to be sweating with their beards and their curls. Like, come on, dude.
I didn't see anywhere in the Old Testament or the Torah where it says God said sweat it out. Like, I don't know if sweating is a big part of it. Anyway, we got to get back to the big story. The part one of the big story, because this is a two-part episode. The Egans came in the beginning. Steve Egan, Sherry's mostly been quiet. But Steve has been throwing his suspicion on this homeless man, Israel.
Sherry has that, like, and I don't say this lightly, but she does have that, like, abused, abused spouse, like, feel. A very dominant husband who, like, doesn't let her do shit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty clear that she doesn't have much of a say in anything that she says or does from the episode and the next episode. Sipowicz and Simone bring in Israel, and they note to Fancy that he hasn't said a word since they picked him up. And they don't know if it's an act. Then when they go to interview him, also important, Israel is played by Tom Gossam Jr., who I didn't recognize in anything. Apparently he's in Fight Club as one of the police officers in Fight Club. But
good for him.
I just wanted to mention that he does a really fucking good job as this mute homeless man.
Yeah, especially not having to talk. Now, do we think he's chose do you think he's made the choice not to talk? Or do we think that he's like a deaf, or like deaf or mute or something?
I think he's mute. And I think he's, I don't know. Because a part of me thought, okay, he's like, he's partially mentally challenged and mute. And he kind of like memorized the Bible in a way to respond to people's questions. But, because when they talk to him, they ask him questions that he doesn't like answer anything. And then when he brings up, when he tries to answer one of their questions, he brings up this passage that seems to have nothing to do with what they're talking about. But then they bring up Brian, and he acknowledges that he knows him, knows that he's a child, and knows that his father occasionally would visit with them, but says he hasn't seen him in 3 days, by indicating how many days he hasn't seen him. It's really interesting because, like, you see these two investigators who now have to... They have to interrogate slash interview with a person who doesn't know how to speak, but figure out how to communicate with
them. And a person they don't believe did it.
Yeah. And that first interview, you can tell they're like, okay, well, let's see how he reacts to this news. And they honestly believe he hasn't seen him in 3 days.
And I think you're right. I think from, like, the beginning, you mentioned it. I think from the first time they talked, Sipowicz believes that he did it from the get-go.
And then I think the big thing was they asked him straight out, is Brian alive? And he kind of just looks back at them like, what? Because he doesn't talk. So just like the look on his face of like, what do you mean, is he alive? Like, I would assume so.
Yeah.
Like, what? And then they get out of the room and tell Fancy, like, we don't think he did it. It seems very serious. It seems like it's not an act. And then Fancy gets the call that they found a DOA child in an empty lot near Tompkins Square Park. Sipowicz, in response, says, I don't think I can work this. So Simone and Fancy try to work out who will work it instead. And Sipowicz says, I just had a momentary feeling. What is this, a kangaroo court? And I thought that was hilarious.
I find that scene funny, that, like Sipowicz gets mad that they interpret him having emotions. And then you have to remember it's the 1990s and, like, men aren't allowed to have emotions yet. Like, they're not allowed to, like, be, like, for him to have an emotion and, like, be bothered by it. He's not allowed to have that.
Yeah, they're supposed to be able to, like, compartmentalize your emotional reactions to those things.
Like, basically what his reaction should have been to make everyone feel comfortable is when they're like, okay, there's a body of a whatever-year-old boy, his first reaction should have been like, let's fucking go! Like, that's what they basically are saying, like, oh, wow, you had a momentary, like, human thought? Nah, you can't come anymore. Like,
well, I also think, because I watched that scene, and I was like, because that will play into what happens with the whole story and the back and forth, but what I thought was happening really was, like, both Fancy and Simone know that Sipowicz does not do well when it's a kid. When a kid's been hurt. And because Simone now knows, and I think Fancy doesn't know it yet, but Simone knows, Sipowicz is going to go after this dad super hard. Because that's just in his nature. Because I think even Simone smells the idea that the dad is setting up Israel to take the fall for this. Fancy and Simone kind of both go, you know what, maybe you should be taken off of this. They both listen to him and go, you know what, maybe you should. Like, maybe we should for the first time go, Sipowicz isn't a good person to work this one. Because it's going to require some subtlety and some, like, surgical, like...
Yeah, it's not smash and grab.
Even though, like, Sipowicz can do that in certain cases, but because it's a child, he's going to get really upset and angry and lash out, so maybe we should take him off of it. And then Sipowicz's response is like, no, I can do the job. Don't tell me I can't do the job. I can do the job.
But I think that's what they wanted his response to be the whole time, was I can do the job. I think that's what they were trying. I don't know. That's the way I took it.
What happens next is they go to confirm that the body is, in fact, Brian's. And it's that NYPD blue thing where it's just score.
Yeah.
And like they don't have any
dialogue.
It's
score and reaction.
It's all it is score and reactions. Where they show the body by showing just the feet. and everything else is covered up. And
Dipowitz has to bite his, clench his teeth together.
When they go back to Israel, they do a Simone, like, because they can tell that this guy is fragile, I think.
Yeah.
So Simone is like, okay, well, you know, sometimes our emotions get the best of us, sometimes we do things we don't, we wish we didn't. And then they show him, like, kiddie porn, I think? I don't know.
I think what we're made to believe is that where this, the kid was stashed, where Israel is supposed to have stashed him, there was, like, kiddie porn there, too. I think he's trying to, they're trying to hammer home the point that he, like, likes little kids.
So Simone is like, he's setting it up where he's like, sometimes we see these things and we understand it, but it can go farther than that, where you act on them and things can get out of your control. Did that happen with Brian? And then Sipowicz pulls the hard-ass, like, makes him look at it, puts it in front of his face, gets aggressive with him. And then the guy starts, like, whining like an animal and, like, looks like he's going to start crying and he freaks out. And then Simone...
Yeah, well, because I think, like, I think, one, they're yelling and he doesn't, he's not doing well with that. And then also, like, you look up and there's, like, a little baby dick in your face, like, you're going to wonder, like, what's going on.
And also, just, like,
No, and I don't mean that, like, joking around, but, like, okay, imagine you get pulled into the police station, right? And,
well, like, yeah, I was about to bring this up.
They come and talk to you like normal, just fine. Like, they don't think you're involved, but, like, they have to because this, like, crazy person is setting you up. And so they're talking to you, and you guys are just chit-chatting. And then they go away. And then let's say 2 hours goes by. 2 hours goes by, and then they come back in screaming and yelling at you, and then they're throwing baby porn in your face.
Well, yeah.
Like, wouldn't you, your reaction kind of be like, wait, what the fuck's going on?
Well, because, I mean, I watched this episode, like, 3 times to prepare with notes and whatnot. And the thing I thought is, if you're Israel, you're a guy that struggles so hard to communicate with people because you can't speak and you're homeless. So, like, you have interactions like their first interview all the time where people ask you questions, they try to understand what you're saying, and they work out a way to communicate with you. Those happen fairly often.
Yeah.
So, okay, so you have the first one, and you're like, man, this is weird. They brought me into this office. I don't know what's happening. They're asking about this kid that I saw 3 days ago that I see occasionally. I don't know what they're talking about. They asked if Brian was alive. I don't understand that. I don't know what the fuck they're getting at. Then the second time they come in, they're like, hey, so sometimes emotions get the best of us. I'm like, okay, what are you getting at? And then they throw me kiddie porn. I'm like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like, what did we talk about that led to this? And then Simone starts, like, Sipowicz starts shoving it in your face. And then you're like, get this fucking, what, stop. Like, this is not what I want. I didn't ask for kiddie porn when I pointed to the Bible. Like, I don't understand. And then Simone just looks him in the eye and goes, Brian's dead, did you kill him? And he's like, no. Just the idea of being that helpless, where you can't...
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't know what's happening. So that Sipowicz gets angry, he throws all the kiddie porn in a trash can, and he walks out the office, or off that, out of that interview room, and he runs into the Egan's. So he has...
Yeah, like, this dude is, like, always around.
And I just love how, like, Sipowicz has got warthog face on. That's what I call Sipowicz's angry face. He's got warthog face. And he, like, whips around that corner with, like, a trash can full of kiddie porn. And just, like, like, runs into those parents. And then he, like, has to do a hard reset. So he, like, puts his hand on his head. It's, like, the weirdest scene. But it's also, like, I thought, what was he gonna do? Like, if the parents weren't there, was he just gonna take that kiddie porn and, like, throw it off the stairs? Like, what was his plan with the trash can? Like, I didn't get it. That is very true,
because, like, what's the end game here?
where are you going with that kiddie porn there, Sip? Like, are you just gonna walk it?
Yeah, what's the end game with the baby dicks? Does it make you uncomfortable that I call them baby dicks?
No, it's just very random and weird. I'm also thinking about the... it makes me think about the Trevor Moore song, God Hates the Tips of Little Baby's Dicks.
It's pretty good.
So then they see...
But I mean, have you seen an uncircumcised dick? No, thank you.
Yeah, so gross. The Egan's are there. And they now have to tell them that their son is dead. But Sipowicz is...
Right, that's right. They still haven't told them that their son is dead.
And Sipowicz, you can tell from the moment he sees them, he's like, I'm gonna fucking go after this guy. Yeah. Like, at least I could. Because he drops the kiddie porn, and Simone's like, oh, I want to thank you guys for coming in. And Sipowicz is like, we can talk in here. And even Simone is like, oh, shit. And he brings them into the room with the cage. The interrogation room that has the cage in it. And they do what they do with a lot of other people that have dead relatives that they need to explain. They say, you should prepare yourself. We found a body. You're going to have to confirm with a photograph. Be prepared. They show it to Sherry, and of course she fucking loses it, as any mother would. And then Steve kind of loses it.
Yeah, right? Like, after rewatching it, I mean, I feel like he does lose it, right?
He does cry, and he goes, and he walks away.
But there's no tears, though.
It's weird. It's hard to explain. But what he does then do is he then asks about Israel, if they have him. Sipowicz even says, shouldn't you take some time with your wife now, Steve? And then Steve asks, well, where did you find him?
Yeah, Steve's a little nosy motherfucker.
And he asks him, where did you find him in the area? And then they say, we found him in a vacant lot.
In the vicinity of Thompson Square Park. Yeah, I remember that.
And Steve says, that makes sense because they clear him at night. They clear all the vagrants at night. Then Steve...
I need you to help me understand where Sipowicz loses them.
Okay, I will, because I watched it like 3 times and reversed it a couple times. Okay, so what happens is, the thing that tips it over for me that Steve definitely did it, Steve then asks, was he sexually violated? Why would you ask that?
Yeah, that's true.
Why would you ask? Unless you know it's already happened. Why would you ask them that? So then, they asked him, have you ever talked with Israel? And he says, no, Israel, I don't think Israel talks. I think that's what drew Brian to him. It's this big, shambling thing that doesn't speak. And then Sipowicz snaps with, is that what drew you to him?
Oh, there we go.
And then Steve goes, what do you mean by that? And then Simone says, oh, that you would trust him with your son. And then Steve is like, yeah.
There it is.
And then Steve makes a show of it by saying, and for that I'll never forgive myself. And Sipowicz says, excuse us. And like he goes for the door. And Simone, trying to recover from everything, says, can I get you guys anything? And Steve, because he's a fucking prick, says, can you get us our son back? And Sipowicz goes to turn. If you watch that scene, Sipowicz is like halfway out the door, and he turns around to just go right at him. And Simone pushes him out the door. It's pretty great, because it looks like if you were at a bar and you saw a guy that was about to go fight someone, and his friend just pushed him away. It was like,
yeah.
It was so rad. Because then Sipowicz and Simone have an argument outside.
Well, because Sipowicz keeps saying he knows I like him.
Well, no, because Sipowicz is just on fire because he's like, this guy is leading us by the nose how to make this case by pinning it on this poor mute son of a bitch. Or I think he says, poor mute bastard. And Simone says, yeah, I know that and you know that, but he's smart enough to know he won't let us go talk to him a million times.
Yeah.
So then Sipowicz is like, oh man, I fucked this up. And then Simone is like, here's what we do. We go and get them refreshments. We let them think about it for a while. And then we come back in. And then as soon as he's about to finish his plan, they come out and say, we need to leave immediately.
That's what I'm saying. That dude is like always somewhere, or like he's always when you turn around, he's there. It's kind of creepy.
Steve uses his wife to say, like, she's in shambles. We need to leave immediately. And
I mean, she kind of is in shambles.
It's true, she's pretty fucked up. And as they leave, Sipowicz is like, do you think we could talk to you maybe later this afternoon? He's like, I think you have someone to talk to. Basically just doubling down on Israel needs to be talked to.
Yeah, and he makes Sipowicz feel some type of way, I think. I think that's what also kind of like pushed Sipowicz over.
And Sipowicz even like says, he says twice, I knew I shouldn't have worked this, I knew I shouldn't have worked this, and I let him know that I liked him. So he gets pissed and like goes to the bathroom. The next time we have any info on it, Simone is talking with the medical examiner, and he's found out Brian definitely was killed somewhere else and moved to the park, or the empty lot, and he has a history of sexual abuse. Like, it's been happening for a while.
How can you... I mean, I guess answers itself, but like, I was, like, gonna say, how can you tell if there's, like, a history?
Anal scarring, I believe he says.
There we go, that's right. Good old-fashioned anal scarring.
Just a little hashtag anal scarring. He says the parents are coming back, but they're lawyered up. And as he's in the middle of it, Sipowicz comes back from the bathroom and freaks out because he heard Simone say anyways, and he assumes he's talking shit, which is not the case. Sipowicz and Fancy and Russell and Simone are...
Okay. Sipowicz is in his feelings because he fucked up.
Yeah, so, he fucked up hard.
Like, he's going to take anything the wrong way right now.
They all talk about what the play should be. Sipowicz says, here's what you do, and he talks to Fancy, and he says, you make a big show out of taking me off the investigation, so it makes it look like my suspicions are not the way you're going, to make him feel a little bit better, and then you go after him after some time. And then Fancy's like, why don't we use Diane to split off the mother?
Which isn't a bad idea.
And what's cool about this is, like, they're basically coming up with a game plan to go after a very complicated situation, and then the parents show up in the middle of that game plan.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like this dude's, what he thinks is going to help him is, like, he's like, just bombard them and be there all the time. That's what it feels like. It's like, we'll just constantly be there the whole time on them.
When the Egans show up, they show up with their lawyer, Daniel Davis, and they say that they have some ideas on the homeless man. Fancy and Simone kind of do a little butt kissing and make a big
what
show.
What ideas could you have, though? Like, you know what I mean?
This is also, like, proof positive this fucker knows something, is because he brings a lawyer with him and says, I have more information about the homeless man.
Yeah, that's weird.
He thinks he's so smart and the police are so dumb that they're not going to be suspicious by that point. If they weren't suspicious before, to come back with your lawyer and go, hey, I got more proof it's that homeless man. Okay.
And like, where are you getting this proof? Why are you getting this proof?
Yeah, exactly. Fancy makes the big show about Sipowicz being off the case. They bring Russell, the Egans, and the lawyer to the interview room with the refrigerator and the refreshments and such. And
they make a big deal about it, about telling them that they're doing it that way too.
And Steve Egan, because he's a fucking douchebag, the second they get into that room, they go, oh, do we not want to do this one in the room with the cell?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, man.
And Simone kind of, because Simone's smart, he goes, well, you know, some people conduct investigations differently. I didn't find that appropriate. But that's what happened. And then he's like, oh, well, I guess Sipowicz isn't in charge anymore. And it's like, okay, fucking, okay, Dick. We're past that. What fucking information do you have? And Steve Egan then says, hey, look, I may have at some point walked to where Israel sleeps with Brian, and I can show you where it is.
And show you everything that you need, down to...
down to everything. The big smoking gun. And then Simone is like, okay, well, that's a good idea, because we can tell Israel that, because we haven't confronted him yet, because we're still building rapport, but if we say we go to where he lives, that might make him think we have evidence when we really don't. And then yeah. Egan snaps with, well, maybe instead of deception, you should go and see if you actually find something. Which, if you could go after him, because of the lawyer, you would then say, why do you think so firmly that we will find something, unless you know it's there?
Yeah, like, why are you so adamant about us going there?
And then, of course, he's like, okay, I'll take you, and then Russell can stay with Sherry. So we got the split off.
Wouldn't, real quick, Kirk, wouldn't any, like, smart lawyer be like, hey, Steve, stop talking so much.
Well, yeah, this is also kind of shows how bad their lawyer is, because when they suggest splitting, he doesn't go, hey, no, you can't talk to either of my clients alone.
Alone, yeah, exactly.
But he was just like, yeah, whatever, he'll be fine. And
he's like, yeah, I'll stay with her, no problem.
Simone takes Steve to the spot where he thinks, in big, giant quotes, Israel's been staying, and when you see them walk through the area, Simone clocks something, like, immediately, but lets it go.
Yeah, as soon as he comes down the stairs, he looks to his left.
And he sees it, and he just lets it go, and then Steve looks at the exact same fucking spot. And Simone kind of walks through the area and goes, yep, looks like someone sleeps here. Do you have another spot that you said he was? And then Steve himself goes, what's that? And points to Brian's bloody shirt in and amongst his trash.
Yeah, what I really liked about it is that, like, they waited in the whole, like, sorry, Corona. They waited for Simone to get up the stairs, to start to go up the stairs before they made that Steve guy go, like, oh, hey, what's this? You know what I mean? That I found super interesting, too.
Because, yeah, Steve was like, he's going to miss it, and then he's not going to completely go after Israel, because I made him think it is Israel. Well, another thing is, he pulls out this shirt, and then Steve goes, are those bloodstains? When it's like, okay, dude, play it up even more. If Simone was Sipowicz, I feel like you would have thrown him up against the wall right there and said, yeah, it is, and you know it is, because you fucking put it here. Like, your lawyer ain't here, nobody's here, you're in the middle of, like, a homeless guy's house. So he, like, it would have been, yeah, it would have been game over for that guy. It, like, this wouldn't have gone any farther. And
a homeless guy's house that you know pretty well, like, you know the outlook, you know the outline. Like, you're pretty well versed in this random homeless dude's house. Like, it's kind of funny.
They get the shirt and they cut to a commercial break. But when we come back, Russell is sitting with the mother and she's building a rapport with her by saying, hey, you know, I lost my dad to violence and it'll get better with time. And the mother's like, time won't heal this. It's just too horrible. And it ends with a hug. But what happens is the second Steve bursts through the door, she cuts off the hug and Steve is like, this sick dude had Bri's shirt covered in blood. And the mom's like, I don't even care. I just want Brian back. And Steve looks at Simone and goes, I care. Simone puts a look at Russell that's like, oh my god, I want to murder this man. Simone then goes to the bathroom where Fancy and Sipowicz come in after him. And just the way Simone turns around and goes, this guy's a monster. He brought me to the kid's shirt. He held my hand to his kid's own blood. And said that he held off seeing it, so to see what the dad's play would be, and he didn't even wait for the examiners to get there or crime scene. He had to bring my hand to it. And then he looks at Fancy and he goes, how do we get him then, boss? What do we do? And Russell comes in a little bit later and says, I got the mom to move a little. And Fancy's like, let's bring down Israel, make that dude think he's off the hot seat. And they set up man, this episode is so good and long. Which is weird, because the next episode is literally longer. They set up a fake interrogation where Sipowicz goes at Israel, and he goes hard at Israel.
Yeah, he goes real hard at Israel.
He goes full Sipowicz at Israel.
Now, so I have a okay, explain the scene, and then I have a question to ask you.
Steve Egan and his lawyer and Fancy are watching from the observation room, and Steve is like, oh, so he asks about Sipowicz, and he's like, look, what you may have felt about Sipowicz dealing with a grieving family member is different when he's dealing with a suspect. And then Sipowicz is like, he's like, let me see Brian's shirt. And he's like, that's Brian's shirt with his blood on it, Israel. How did that happen? And he's like, don't give me the goo-goo eyes, and don't give me this nonsense. We need to understand what's going on here. And then Simone plays the cool, like, collected, relaxed, like, hey, something happened here. We got to get ahead of it. We got to hear your side. We got to understand. And then Sipowicz pulls the hard cop where he's like, he doesn't want to give any cooperation, and then he goes into one of those really long Sipowicz threats, where he's like, I know that you could shake your head yes and no, so we're going to leave you in here a couple minutes to think it over, and then I'm going to come back in and ask some questions, and if I don't get the right nods, you won't be able to move your head ever again, basically. And Steve Egan is like, I see what you mean, and he even goes, this hard cop, soft cop, and it's like, retard, it's good cop, bad cop, get your shit together. Well, I just hate Steve Egan, he's a fucking piece of shit, and Fancy, and he says, I understand what you mean by Sipowicz being an asset, and then Fancy goes, yeah, Sipowicz is a real piece of work. There's one point in the interrogation where Simone says something that could apply to Steve, and he has a moment, because he says, like, look, emotions could take over someone, and something happened that they never intended, and if that's what happened here, you gotta let us know now. And then they leave him to think about what they said.
So my question to you.
Yeah.
Do you think that they told Israel that they were going to have to be aggressive towards him?
No.
Because, I don't know, I feel like, because later on, Sipowicz makes, like, such a huge deal about, like, if we tell this guy that he killed that kid, he's going to break him, you know? It's going to break his heart.
I think... But, like, yeah.
Sorry. You don't think coming at the kid like that, the guy like that with the kid's t-shirt and the blood, didn't break his heart? I feel like, unless you would have told him, you know what I mean? I don't know.
I think they didn't tell him to get a genuine reaction. Because
that dude was watching. I get that.
Yeah, I think they didn't say anything, but I think as soon as Steve was out of that room, they probably went back in and said, hey, Israel, I'm sorry about that. We're going to keep you here a little bit longer, but that was just kind of, we didn't mean that. Because what happens after that is Fancy Russell, Simone, Sipowicz, and Cohen are in a meeting in Fancy's office. Russell basically says, I can work on the mom, but the husband and the lawyer need to not be there.
Yeah.
And they're working out how they can get forward. And then Cohen, because he's a real fucking dick, says... Oh, I just want to mention that I'd really be salivating over going to bat against the mute homeless man. And Sipowicz is like, have you not been fucking listening to what we're saying? And Cohen tries to wriggle out of it by saying, look, I understand that we don't believe it, but if we were to go to bat, he would get charged. And he's like, yeah, that's the fucking point, dick. And that's why when they insulted him, I didn't feel bad for him at all. Because Sipowicz is like, and they wonder why they call him asshole. And Cohen's like, if you want to have a...
I mean, if I was Cohen, right, at that point in my life, I would know that no matter what I did, it would never make Andy happy. So, like, at this point, if Andy's, like, making fun of me or talking shit about me or my name or whatever, it doesn't really, like, it doesn't hurt me. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it'd be different if, like, Diane said something to me. Because, like, she's normally, like, a nice, decent person, whereas Andy's always an asshole to me. I don't know. I just found it. I don't know.
It's also, like, a decent person. The reason I don't agree... Because sometimes Cohen is in a situation where it's, like, the way he's responding is all right. It's just that Sipowicz is trying to do something else, and they're butting heads that way. Cohen has no reason... to, in this meeting, say, man, I really want to go after this homeless man. He has no reason. He can say, and it would have been more appropriate to say, hey guys, I'm just letting you know, if you put this homeless man up, he will go. Like, it will happen. It'll be on the fast track. That is very different than saying, man, I'm salivating to do this. Because then it sounds like, oh, I'm a fucking dickhead. And even though I know it's wrong, I can do it, and it'll be great.
Yeah, it's just all about how you say things, you know?
He suggests we should just arrest... they should just arrest Israel to make it seem like the other guy's free and in the clear. And Simone is like, what are you talking about? He has a good enough lawyer that it will never stick once you arrest the homeless guy. So he's like, what we need to do is we just need to hold Israel... make the guy think that we're definitely going to arrest him, and then get some time to work on the mom and everybody else. And they kind of all tentatively agree, but then Sipowicz is like, who has to tell Israel that he can't go anywhere?
Yeah, and they all just kind of look around.
And then Sipowicz takes over. And the thing that kind of confused me, and this might just be my perspective as never being homeless, never being in a situation like that, but they make it seem like staying at the police station is a bad thing. But isn't that police station cot better than the streets?
True.
Like, because they say, like, oh, who gets to tell him he can't leave? Leave to go live on the streets? Like,
he may not understand why he's being, like, told to stay there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he may not get... They may go tell, like... Yeah, it may be better for him to not be on the street, but he knows he didn't kill that kid. This is all in Israel's brain.
Mm-hmm.
He knows he didn't kill that kid. He knows he didn't he had nothing to do with it. So why should he have to be in the jail for the night? You know what I mean? And he's not going to be able to, like, convey that with his words either, you know?
And Sipowicz, this is the scene where Sipowicz says, if you accuse him of actually killing that kid, you'll break his heart, which is like... And that's when Fancy's like, look, if we screw up his living situation temporarily to get the right guy, I mean, we have to do it. And Sipowicz is the one that goes to tell him, and they have a moment when they're in the bunk, and he says, look, you're gonna have to stay here, Israel, but I want you to know, I don't believe you did this. And then he's like, do you have any thoughts on Brian's dad? And he gives him a passage that's basically like, the proud have set up lies against me, but I'll keep thy precepts. So,
yeah.
So Sipowicz is like, holy shit, this guy knows what he's doing. So then he asks for another one, and he gives him another story about, like, going out on an ass, and don't slow up your ride just for me. And Sipowicz is like, oh, I thought we had something there. I'll come back and see you tomorrow. You'll get food, and there's a bathroom down there. But I'll see you in the morning. The end of the episode is Russell, Sipowicz, and Simone trying to talk out what they're going to do. It ends with Russell kind of giving this metaphor about this monster behind the door that Sherry is too scared to open the door and see.
Because the monster is her son, or is her dead son, or whatever.
And it's going to be covered in blood, and you have to make her open it and make her see it, no matter how terrible it is, and stuff like that. And then Sipowicz says, Sipowicz also says, I gotta find a Bible, probably to try and understand what Israel is saying. And then it just shows three of them and fades to black on, like, a to be continued, and that's the end of the episode.
Yeah, sets us up for Lost Israel Part 2.
Lost Israel Part 2. Anything, do you have anything to say about this episode before we wrap up?
I mean, you can't tell based off of maybe how I was talking about it, but it's one of my favorite episodes. I really like, I think we've talked about this before, it goes back to the Webster one. I really like when they do two-parters,
because
I feel like they can open up on the, like, the crime more or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas this one is more of a, it's more, they're looking at it in a different way more than anything else. I feel like they're more looking at it from, like, instead of, like, them having a killer they're trying to catch, it's a little different this way. But, I don't know, I like it. I think it's interesting. I think it's also just an interesting story. I don't know. I like it.
I like part one more than part two. I'm gonna...
Oh, for sure.
I'm gonna spoil that ahead of time, but I think what really makes this episode the best is Israel. The Egans are good, too, but Israel is, like, this completely innocent thing at the center of it.
Yeah.
And they go to him, and you're like, man, this is so horrible for this guy that they can't help in any way.
How? And I feel like there's... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I feel like there's also really... there's some good acting in it, too.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like the acting is pretty good in this episode. I feel like the sequel to this one, the acting gets a little hammy.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. Oh shit, are we gonna talk about it? That's for sure.
but yeah.
Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is available on AsherBrothersPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and where you find your podcasts. We're on Twitter at AsherBrosPod, Instagram at AsherBrothersPodcast. And have a good one. Keep watching NYPD Blue. And a reminder, it's no longer on Amazon. It is only on Hulu, which...
Amazon got rid of it?
Yeah, and unfortunately, Hulu doesn't have the previously on NYPD Blues, so it'll make it a little harder to understand what happens in certain episodes, especially like Israel Part 2, if you don't watch Israel Part 1, because there's no previously to wrap it up for you. Most people are smart enough not to do that, but some people are very dumb. Anyway, have a good one. Keep safe, keep healthy, wash your hands, cover your face, social distance, all that jazz. Peace. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show on whatever format you're using to listen to it. If you rate and review it, it will get bumped up in the algorithm, and hopefully more people will listen to the show. And most importantly, more people will watch NYPD Blue, which, as previously mentioned, is on Hulu and no longer on Amazon streaming. So plan ahead if you would like to watch it. It's always on DVDs. I understand in certain countries that's less than true. I apologize and sorry that you will not be able to receive all of the episodes if you don't have Hulu. If you need more NYPD Blue information in your life, there's a bunch of books out there. True Blue, written about the first couple seasons by the creators and consultants. What Would Sipowicz Do? A collection of articles about the show. And then, of course, there's also an unofficial guide to NYPD Blue by Gene Kendall on Amazon for like 99 cents. You can check out all those. Thanks again for listening. Please keep safe. Please wash your hands. Keep your face covered. And distance if you can. Keep watching NYPD Blue. Peace.